Rabbi Saperstein will be speaking on Amir Lachlan.
Okay, gentlemen, I understand I have half an hour to accomplish the impossible, which is to do justice to Amir Lachlan. So I'd like at least to give an overview, like a matrix into which you can put in all the details as you learn. Basically, the first issue in Amir al-Akum is the source of the Isser. What's wrong with Amir al-Akum? Especially, we know Goy Sheshav is Chayv Misa. So if I can, it looks like I'm doing him a favor by asking him to do a melacha on Shabbos. So that's our first question. Why is it Isser? Second, the scope of the Isser. Does it apply even where I don't ask him to do anything? And as the name itself, Amir al-Akum, says, don't ask the Goy to do melacha for you. But we know that there are cases where it's also for me to benefit from what the Gentile did on my behalf on Shabbos, even without any Amira. So basically the Shaila is, does Amira la'akum need an Amira? Or are there cases where the Gentile's doing for me, even without being told, that it's going to be Asr, and where are the parameters there? Because if that's always Asr, then has Amira play a role at all? Third, does it include non-Shabbos things? Now, is Amira la'akum a din in Shabbos only? Or is it something called a Torah Kula, that if I can't do something, I can't ask the guy to do it? This would be relevant. People have pets, and they want to have the pets sterilized. So the Shiloh, you go to a vet. So you go to a Gentile vet. Are you allowed to ask the Gentile vet to sterilize your pet? That's a very practical issue that comes up with Amir al-Akums. So those are the first three things, the fundamentals. The source of the Isser, does it apply even without an Amir when they have Hana? And does it include non-Shabbos things? Then the second part is the cases where Chazal allow an Amir al-Akum. Let's say somebody is sick. B'makom chaylo goz rabbanan. That leads us to a subdivision. If a house is very cold, so there's a klal hakol chaylo meitzlat sinna, and therefore the Shulchan Aruch is lenient that when there's a danger of people getting sick because it's cold in the house, then you can ask a guy even to do doraisas, to turn on the you could have him turn on the heat on Shabbos because I call chayla mates latzina. Then you have the case of b'makom mitzvah. Is Amir la'akum allowed b'makom mitzvah? And if so, is it only where I'm asking the guy to do that which is otherwise a drabana? We normally call the shvus b'makom mitzvah, where there's wide acceptability of the head to the mechaber allows that. I'm asking the guy to do an act. Even if I were to do it, it would be a drabbanan. So it's a double-decker drabbanan l'tzorach mitzvah. So the mechaber is mekel. We know that there's a famous sheet. It's called the Baal Itur Shita, that if it's b'makom mitzvah, I could ask a guy even to do that which is normally a Torah prohibition, such as turning on the light. So in the olden days when they had incandescent bulbs, which were according to most poskim and d'oraisa that they turned on Shabbos, so if there's no lights in shul and you want to get the Shabbos guy to turn on the light, that's basically relying on the Baal Itur. If you look at the Mishnah Berurah is very negative about relying on the Baal Itur. However, in the Tzitz Eliezer, he brings down from the Zakan Aaron, that although the Mishnah Berurah says it's the Shitus Yachid, the Baal Itur, there is plenty of weight on that side. And what's interesting, when you look at this Shita historically and chronologically, the earlier opinions were lakula. And there's the Bahag and the She'iltais, both from the Tukufas HaGo'enim, are unanimously lakula. So it's not like a Baal Itur Shita. It's the original Shitas HaGo'enim. It happens to be that the Rif and afterwards the Rambam came down on the other side. And that's why the Mishnah Berurah and many Achrayim are very loath to rely on it, even though from the Ramah we see that it was a minug for Ashkenazim to rely on that. So that would be something to go into. It's very practical. That Amir la'akum b'makom mitzvah, is it only by a shvus to shvus, or even to ask him to do a doraisa? Another shah that comes up is, let's say that the you had a chulent and you have it plugged in on Shabbos, and let's say that, you know, Friday night, after it's already cooked enough that there won't be a bishul akum issue, the Gentile pulled out the plug and then realized that he or she made a mistake, and then she puts the plug back in. So normally, I'm not allowed to benefit from what the guy does, but in this case, the guy is just compensating for what the guy messed up. So there is a Eliyarabba, a Bir Halacha, and the Shevet Halevi on this. The Shevet Halevi's case is very interesting. You set the Shabbos clock. You're going away Friday night to guests. So you set the Shabbos clock to go on at 11 o'clock. The Goyisha maid sees that there's no light on, so she disconnects the Shabbos light and turns on the light. So on one hand, normally if a Goy makes a light on Shabbos in the room that otherwise would be pitch black, it's a major problem. But here, you set up a situation. You should have light at 11 o'clock. Only the Goy messed it up and the Goy compensated. The Maaseh Shevet HaLevi is makel in that case. So that would be relevant to the Cholin cases. However, you have to remember, although what the Goy made a mistake on, the Goy can compensate for, you have to still worry about Bishul Akum if it hasn't been cooked at all. Okay. What about Amira de Amira, where Goy, you tell Goy A to tell Goy B to do a malacha, so that is also raid in Achronim, is that allowed? And that will be relevant. You want to get a next day letter you send for some sort of business need. You have a Goyish client, so normally you can't tell a Goy to do anything on Shabbos, Kovei Malachto, even if it would be Bekablonis, even if you say the post office is not Skiyom, it's a contract job. But over here, when you give the postal clerk behind the counter the next day letter, so although you're telling them you want to deliver it on Shabbos, but they ain't delivering it on Shabbos. They're going to put it through the system, so you're basically telling Goy A to get Goy B to deliver on Shabbos. And Amira La Amira has some Achram that make it also. And therefore, that's another thing that has to go into when it's also when it's mutter. Another interesting area is when the action you're asking is not intrinsically a malacha, but it'll be accompanied by a malacha, i.e., if the light is left in the refrigerator, I can't open up the refrigerator door on Shabbos because it's a psik resha, it's automatic. When I open up the refrigerator door, the light bulb goes on. However, the Mishnah Berurah holds by a goy, there is no consideration of psik resha. So I can tell the goy to open up the refrigerator door, even though it's a psik resha on an incandescent bulb, which could be a doraisa, because by Amira La'akum, we're looking at what is the intrinsic thing you want done, not the collateral damage or the psik reshas that come from it. Okay. Another issue will be if I ask the goy to do an activity which will be a drabonin, because I have a heter, let's say somebody is a little bit ill, and you want to ask a Gentile to go pick up medicine at ShopRite. Obviously, we're talking about where it's only a mikzus chayle, and we don't want to be matir, normally, amira la'akum in the doraisa. So when I tell them to go to the drugstore, it's intrinsically only a drabonin, because business, masulman, is drabonin. However, the Gentile is going to hop into the car to do it. Is that my business? I'm asking them, go pick me up some medicine. Picking up the medicine is drabonin. So asking a guy to do a drabonin, letzayrich even chayli b'miktsas, even a small illness, is allowed. But it gets complicated when I know the Gentile is going to happen to a car. Another area that has to be looked into. The next to last area, don't get scared, you know, there's a limit to how many areas there are, is let's say the act is not a clear isser, but it's a machlokas hapaiskim. Is there a leniency that which possibly a Jew could do? Let's say I have a machlokas hapaiskim, and we are machmir, but still a machlokas. So can you say, and there's one side that even the Jew could do it, and there's a machlokas between heter and iser. Am I allowed to say that lagabi amira la'akum, I can be makel and say, I can ask the guy to do it, because there's a possibility even the Jew could do it. So certainly to be makel and amira la'akum, that's also discussed. It's interesting here that the dirsha that normally brings down all the shitas only brings down the mekilim. There is a marshal that says not to be mekel, but it seems that the poskim go with the leniency, that which is a machlokas, whether a Jew is mutar or aser, you can certainly ask a guy to do. And the last thing, and maybe the most misunderstood, is remazim. Where is this heter that you're not allowed to ask the guy, but you can hint? In what parameter does hinting work? So those are all of the issues that in 10 minutes we've listed, so that as you go through the sugya, you know what the groundwork looks like. Now, for the next 20 minutes, we'll take a look at some details on a few selected ones. So let's talk first about the issur. Where does the issur of Amira La'akum come from? So you'll have at least five opinions. One of them is there's a drasha that by malach in the pasuk it says, it shall not be done yei osa. It's not that you shouldn't do malachas, that malachas should not be done. And this the Beis Yosef brings down from the Smag, and it's also a Yireyim, two of the Balei Taisis in their halakhic works. They bring down this drasha, and this seems to indicate that it's a Doraisa, or maybe it's Nesmachta, but the idea is that it's not enough on Shabbos that you are not doing the malacha, but that malacha should not be done for you. One possibility. Then you have what I think is the most accepted pshat, the Rambam Shita. It's a drabonan. If you ask the guy to do it, you might come to do it yourself. So you can't ask a guy to do it, because once it's a thing you talk about doing on Shabbos, you might come and do it yourself. Third Shita is a Ritva. The Ritva says the problem with asking a guy to do malacha is then theoretically you could go to work on Shabbos. Right? Let's say you're skilled at delegating tasks. So Shabbos is no longer a day of rest. You go to the office and you give the instruction. Okay, Pedro, you do that. Picture a farm. You can be out in the farm all day on Shabbos. Pedro, you plow, and Juan, you pick the tomatoes, and you weed, and you put in fertilizer. It'll be mamish like a weekday. So somebody will say, okay, but Amaisa, I'm a Shomer Shabbos, so good. I'm still working on the farm. So here I believe the Ritva is following his Rebbe's Rebbe, the Ramban. The Ramban has a chiddush in Shabbos. We normally think that there's 39 malachas, and then after that, there are rabbinic fences around the 39 malachas. But the Ramban, on the word Shabbosin by Rosh Hashanah, you find it in Chumash, on Shabbosin by the Parsha of Rosh Hashanah, also in the Kol Kisvei, in Rosh Hashanah, the Ramban expounds a new chiddush. There's 39 malachas. Then there is Naseh called Shabbosin. Make it a noticeable day of rest. And that is a generality that the Torah says, and is given to the Chachamim to fill in the details. So there's a Doraisa concept of Shabbosin, and when Chazal made what we normally think of Gezeiros, the Ramban says these are not Gezeiros, for instance, not to carry in the Carmelis. It's not because if you're carrying the Carmelis, you come to carry Rishus HaRabim. It's that it's not Shabbos to carry in the Carmelis. We don't have a noticeable day of rest. And if one would want to understand the philosophical underpinnings of that, if you look at Rashi, where Shabbos is supposed to be an ice, so Rashi says it should be noticeable to the Umos HaOlam, the Jews are being Shomer Shabbos. The Sefer HaChinuch also follows this. In other words, Shmiras Shabbos in a public way is a declaration that there is a creator of the world that created the world in the time period and then stopped creating. And therefore, when we're Shomer Shabbos, we are making a declaration to the world. That is the ice. So Mela, the Ritva fits in beautifully. If Amira La'akum would entitle me to go out into the field and to have all the work done, I was Mavata the ice of Shabbos. And that's how the Ritva learns Amira La'akum, that it could result in conducting yourself on Shabbos like a weekday. Then we have Rashi. Rashi, in different places, brings down two different reasons. One of them is shlichus, and the other is dabir davar. The Navi says that a person's dibur on Shabbos should be different than choil. So if you're talking about a malacha, that's the problem. What's interesting now is you think about these two reasons. If the isser is dabir davar, the main point is you're talking about a malacha. If the isser is shlichus, the main point is he's doing a malacha on your behalf as an extension of you. The Avnei Nezer and the Aruch HaShulchan both say that you need both reasons. Because if it's al shlichus only, so I could tell him on Shabbos, I could tell him Erev Shabbos to do it on Shabbos. If it's only al dabir davar, I could tell him on Erev Shabbos to do it on Shabbos, because dabir davar says don't speak about malacha. So I'm not speaking about malacha on Shabbos. I spoke to him on Friday. So dabir davar would only apply if the talking is on Shabbos. If I would tell him erev Shabbos to do on Shabbos, there'd be no dabir davar, but there would be shlichus. So that's why shlichus would not be sufficient. Okay, as a subcategory on shlichus, would it be different if the guy is paid by me? Because there are opinions that paying somebody makes him a stronger shliach. there's like two levels of shliach, a free shliach and a paid shliach. And by a paid shliach, it could be that that's much more serious, that that's going to be a doraisa, and that's the sheet of the Machane Ephraim. Shaul Meshiv disputes it, the Zakan Aaron diffuses it, neutralizes that. And I believe the Rabbi Radinsky is machmir on that, a paid shliach could be a doraisa and not only a drabbanan. Okay, so those are our five possibilities. It can be because of Ye'aseh, the pasuk of Shabbos. It could be because Shema, I'll come to do it myself, Rambam. Ritva, it doesn't look like a Shabbos day. Dabir Dover, which is the Sheiltas in Rashi. And Shlichus, which is also Rashi. And the subdivision, whether paid Shliach, is going to be even worse. Now, if these are the Isurim, what happens if I don't tell him, but I just have Hanoah? If it's question of Shlichus, I ain't make him a Shliach. If it's a question of Dabir Dover, I ain't say anything. When you go through the reasons, it would seem to stand if I didn't talk, it should be permissible for me to benefit from what the guy does, if I didn't say anything. However, we have a Mishnah in Shabbos, Daf Kuf Chuf Bezim Ad Aleph, that says, Nochu Shehidlik Es HaNer, Im Bishvil Yisrael Osar. A guy lights a light, and I didn't say anything to him. But he did it for a Jew, it's going to be Osar to have benefit. So what's, how's that fit into Amir al-Akum? So Tosfos of Nod says, whoops. Pardon the noise. Tosfos of Nod says that a nochwish isolat sorach Yisrael, you know why it's a problem? Isharis le osil lememer le nochwi lasos bishvilo. It's taka gzeira because if you can benefit from what a guy does for you without being told, we're afraid you will come to speak. So basically, Amir al-Akum is Asar, and now having benefit from anything a guy does for you without being told, Chazal made the Gzeira on. I, you'll say, sounds like a Gzeira l'Gzeira, right? Now, Amir al-Akum, according to most, is a Drabonan. And you're telling me, if the guy lit the candle without being asked, you can't open up a book and read by it, because maybe you'll come from that to tell a guy to do. And if I tell the guy it's a drabonin, so what happened to Gzeira l'Gzeira? So that's the Ritva's question there. And the Ritva says, Osu chazchomim chizik ledivrehem, and he says, V'kulo chad Gzeira, we have this many times, that when Chazal made the Gzeira, it's possible you can parse it into different steps, but in the rabbinic mind, they consider this one package deal, and therefore there's no Gzeira l'Gzeira. There's no heter, rather gzeira l'gzeira. And if a guy would light a light in a place where you're having substantial benefit, which means otherwise it's dark, so you would not have a heter, even though you didn't say anything, to open up a sefer. This, of course, is speaking where it's not l'tzorech mitzvah. Of course, if it would be l'tzorech mitzvah, then we go back to the shaila, that for tzorech mitzvah, maybe I am allowed to ask a guy like the Baal Iter. An interesting incident that shows how far this goes, not to benefit from what a guy does, even though you didn't say, and even if you told the guy, don't do me any favors. There's a tshuva from Aram Rotenberg, printed in the Tshuvas HaRashba, and those of you who are familiar with Tshuvas HaRashba, although it's called the Tshuvas HaRashba, you can see from the names in it that the printer or the collector of the manuscript incorporated other tshuvas from the same time period. So this is tshuva tuf nun zayin, and the question was like this. What about having a Gentile when they heat up the house in Germany, it gets cold. So what's the story with the guy turning on the heat? So Ram Rotenberg says, When I was in France, so they were matarit, and they said the Rimi Olans would tell the guy to masak in the Eish, because Sechelish Ein Bo Sakana can still tell a guy to do it, and Hakul Chaylim Bekrirus. This is important because this could come up very often. The person didn't turn on the heater. His heater is broken. He wants to get a repair person to come in. So the Rimei Alliance was Mako to say that since if it's really cold, people can get sick. But then the Maram Rotenberg says, but here in Germany, I think we should answer it. And the Minig in Germany was Taka to be Machmir, not to have the guy turned on the fire. And then he says, Ani ha'yisi moicha b'shifchasi, shelo l'hachem atonur. And not only I don't want to encourage it, but when my maid wanted to turn on the oven, I said, I protested. Upamim v'sholosh hugashti shayisim mechames b'tzina. So by so she wasn't listening. But I was turned around, so she's lighting the stuff, right? Asisi lo miskeres. So I put a lock on it. Ubechol erev Shabbos ani soigro menicho ad motzi Shabbos shalom meir barbarach. So you see, Maram Rotenberg was so concerned about this problem, which seems to be a gzeira l'gzeira, that since we don't want people telling the goy to do anything, so you shouldn't even enjoy it when they do it without being asked, and here the goy would turn on the heat, so Maram Rotenberg put a lock on the oven. In this, he's a shitas hayochet. There are at least 19 rishayim that speak about this and are mekel. And we find in later generations the Mariel, that was the Rav of the same German city, Magenza, where Maram Rotenberg was. The Mariel was asked about this issue. Can you have the goy turn on the heater on Shabbos? He said, of course you can. Lo shaman, we never heard of anybody being machmer except Maram Rotenberg. I have a special connection to this halacha because the New York Times on May 5th, 1975, had an interesting article in the religion section, and it was about the responsa and rabbis. And they had a beautiful picture of Rav Moshe in the New York Times, but the accompanying article was very unorthodox. I guess it was Israel Miller who writes the religion for the New York Times at that time. The whole idea was, what's the story with Jewish responsa? Is that the rabbis have to change the halacha to fit the time. But what got me was they wanted an example of how rabbis, chas v'shalom, changed the halacha to fit the time. So he writes that although in sunny Babylon it was possible to live with the idea that you couldn't ask a Gentile to make a oven, to turn on the oven, the great Maram Rotenberg of Germany issued a landmark decision to revoke that Talmudic problem, and Maram Rotenberg allowed it. So I thought that was really great research on the part of the New York Times. Here you have 19 Rishonim who are Mekel, and they're not Mekel because of the New York Times. They're Mekel because applying Talmudic principles and not just revoking them, they said that we're as cold as a heter. Maram Rotenberg is the only Machmir from 19 Rishonim, and that's who the New York Times makes the conservative rabbi. So that was a sugya I went because I really led to the others for the Jewish Observer on that one. So I thought that was really indicative of a lack of scholarship. Anyway, that's an extreme example of the idea that even if we don't have an amira, even if we don't ask the guy to do it, there's a problem with enjoying what the Gentile does. Now, in light of that, it's very hard to understand. So where does Ramazim come in? Where is this idea, well, you can't say, but you can be merames? So it seems that the story is like this. When we talk about hana'ah, about benefit, there are two qualifications of a forbidden benefit. It's a positive benefit and a substantial benefit. Let's talk about each factor separately. A positive benefit means that the goy is creating something from which I have usage. What's a non-positive benefit? When the goy turns out a light. Because the fact that the room is now dark, the Gentile did not create darkness. They remove the problem of having a light. That's where Ramazim can operate. I'm not asking the guy to do something which gives me a positive benefit. Where you get a positive benefit, so not only you can't ask the guy and you can't be Merames, even if the guy turns on the light in a completely dark room, I can't read there. Because that's a substantial and positive benefit. But when it comes to turning out the light, I can certainly tell the guy to be merames, I can say I don't need the light anymore. And for the 5 years I was zeicher to be in Mexico City Kailo, where Avreichim can afford full-time maids, don't all pack up and run, I don't know how it is today, but for $10 a week we had our shiksa from 7 in the morning till 10 at night, so we didn't have a Shabbos clock. Friday night, when the maid finished washing the dishes, we told Alicia, no necesitamos la luz, Alicia, we don't need the light anymore, and she went around turning out the lights. Because remiza, to remove a problem, which is the light, rather than to give you something positive, is allowed. So that's one application of remiza, where you want the guy to get rid of the problem, not to give you a positive hana. No, but the question is, what is the guy doing for you? The lashon ritva is the guy is mesalek the hezek. The light is a disturbance, and they're getting rid of that. And those her action is get rid of the light. The darkness that you're enjoying was not created by the guy. It's the default position of the absence of light. But when those, think of that, so when the guy turns on the light, they are creating what you need. When they're turning off the light, they're not creating darkness. They are merely removing the lights that the darkness follows. So that's considered a non-positive benefit, and that's where remiza works. Another case where remiza could work is where the benefit is positive but not substantial, which would mean I already have a light in the room, but it's not convenient. I believe the Shmir Shabbos Kochasa has a case. Well, let's say you have a night light, you know, in a socket far down, and you want to read a book. Now, theoretically, you can lay down by the night light and read the book. Not that convenient. You'd rather sit on your couch and read. So in that case, there are paiskim who will allow you to hint and to say to the Gentile, there's not enough light in the room for me to read by, and hopefully, if the Gentile is intelligent, they understand that means turn on the light. And that's allowed because it's a non-substantial benefit. When the Mishnah said, when the guy makes a light, you can't have any benefit from it, that's talking about when the room was absolutely unusable, and they created the substantial positive benefit of light. But once the benefit is non-substantial, I have some light already and the guy's just giving me more light, or I want to have the negative, in other words, I just want to get rid of the light that's there, that's where hinting helps. But the Mishnah Berurah mentions that the hinting has to be not in the form of a command. Like you can't make up with your guy that, you know, when I touch my yarmulke like that twice, you know to do such a thing. It's got to be what they call sipur hatzairach. I tell the person the need I have, but I can't say do anything or even do an action that means do anything. I can just tell them of the need that I have, and then hopefully they'll figure out what's going on. You have a question? Okay, so I guess we have to go back to all the reasons and say if it's shlichus, if I tell somebody to do something, that fits more neatly into shlichus. If I just say, hey, you know, it's dark in here, that in no way is appointing somebody to be my shliach. So in shlichus it fits. Now, the question is... Yeah, but shlichus means that I'm going to make you my agent, so that's pretty indirect for a shlichus. Right, that's true.
And the Rav knew that if right. She said these words, she would turn off the light.
Right, but still...
Although
that might be in thought the essence of communication, when Chazal made legislation, they made you have to be telling them to do something for it to go into the klal of the Isser. And maybe it would fit better if you go with Dabir Davar. Because if you say or imply, do this malacha, then certainly it's a weekday kind of thing. If I'm just saying, hey, it's too light in here, I can't sleep, I'm not talking about doing the malach at all. So maybe it would fit a little bit with Dabir Davar. And it will be interesting every time we find a heter to go back to the fundamentals and to see exactly where that will fit into the heter. Okay, I think I'm running out of time, so I just want to leave you with one beautiful thought that has nothing to do with Amir al-Akum. And that is that this Shabbos, you know, that after Chatzais, there's a question about whether one can learn. You look on the Bir Halacha, there are Mekilim, especially, you know, in this case where it's Erev Yudav. But there's an obvious question. How could it be that this Shabbos afternoon, you're allowed to drink wine, and you're allowed to have meat? So as far as we're concerned, it's Shabbos, it's not Tisha B'Av, and learning should be a problem? Mamish, it's a Gvaltka question, no? So let me tell you a beautiful Chassam Sefer. You know what the Chassam Sefer says? The problem with learning Shabbos afternoon is not that Shabbos has avelus. But in the Chasam Sofer's world, if a person learns Shabbos in the afternoon, he's so happy the rest of the day. At night, he will not be able to have avelus. The meat and the wine that I have Shalosh Shuvos disappears. So when it comes to the night, I'm in avelus, because all material pleasure disappears and has no staying power. But the simcha of learning stays with you until the night. And when I read that, it makes us want to cry. We see why the Chasam Sofer is who he was and why we are who we are. But can you imagine that a yid that felt, if I learn in the afternoon, today I can't be unhappy. Because learning in the afternoon, there's no such thing as there's no such thing as Tisha B'Av. That's the way the Chasam Sofer explains it. And although we all know how far we are from that, but it's just inspiring to think that there was a human being in this world that had such simcha from learning. And halavai, even if we don't get to be Chasam Sofers, the fact that you gentlemen come at night and spend your time learning, we should all be zeichet together to feel a little bit of that simcha, the Chasam Sofer. Have a pleasant evening.
Okay. Thank you.
Good Shabbos.
Thank you so much.
Okay, it's a pleasure.
Okay. Here you go. What about telling?